all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio. This is Veterans Radio. And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And a good afternoon, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry. I was a Chief Warrant Officer and United States Army Aviator, 1967 to 71. I want to welcome you to our program today. I'm really excited. I want to make sure that I give everybody out there a Happy New Year from all of us at Veterans Radio and Veterans Radio America. Our guest today for the 10th year in a row is going to be Dr. Rebecca Grant, and I can't wait to have her on to talk about what's going on in the world. But just like some other radio stations out there, I got to give our sponsors some credit, so I'm going to do that right away. So first of all, I want to make sure that we thank Legal Help for Veterans. They specialize in veteran disability claim calls. Give them a call at 800-693-4800. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. For more information, especially if you have a veteran-owned business, go to their website, nvbdc.org. The Eisenhower Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan, also with facilities in Florida, they specialize in the treatment for veterans, first responders, athletes, anyone suffering from post-traumatic stress, a TBI, or closed head injury. For more information, you can go to their website, that's EisenhowerCenter.com, or give them a call at 800-553-5543. And the Lieutenant Colonel Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. If you want to learn more about these organizations and the services that they offer, you can go to their websites, or you can go to Veterans Radio by going to veteransradio.net/our sponsors. All right. Well, I am excited to talk. That's the second time already today. I have a note sticking in front of me that I'm supposed to avoid that, saying excited so many times. But it is. We're going into our 19th year here on Veterans Radio, and we're so happy to have all of you listeners. And we wanted to thank everybody for what a great year 2021 turned out to be from our standpoint. We know there are many other things out there that people won't agree with that necessarily. But because of you and our sponsors, we've got another year under our belt, and we're all set to go for 2022. That should be an easy one to remember for us, I hope. Anyway, so as I mentioned earlier, our guest today is Dr. Rebecca Grant. She's a military analyst stationed in Washington, D.C. She has been on our program. I think I've lost count now, but the first one was back in January of 2012. So without further ado, as they say, Dr. Grant, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Happy New Year, Dale. I am thrilled to be back and talking with you about the international situation as we start 2022. And I'm telling you, there is no shortage of headlines and topics to discuss. I don't think many of our diplomats in Washington took much time off over Christmas because they have all been just burning up the phone lines with our European allies and others. So we have things to talk about from Russia to China, to the southern border of the United States. And, of course, we got to touch base on Iran. Anyway, where do you want to start, Dale?
Well, I think since, you know, we've picked up quite a few listeners out there, and they may not know that much about you. So I'd like you to give me a little brief resume of how you got into this business of, you know, the Air Force and international affairs. Could you give us a little background on you?
Oh, you bet I'd love to do that. Well, you know, I could go through the whole story, but I tell you, I come from a military family. My father served in World War II. I came along quite a bit later than that, of course. And my brother was an Army helicopter pilot in Vietnam. I am proud to say I am married to a retired Air Force officer. So these issues have always really interested me. And I went to college and then went and did my PhD in London at the London School of Economics. I worked for the RAND Corporation, which specializes in research for the Air Force and other government clients. And then I was really fortunate as I was sent to work in the Pentagon on the headquarters Air Force staff when I was still pretty new to the business, and that was it. The air power issues, in the aftermath of the 1991 Gulf War, everything was just so interesting. And so air power and now, of course, the Space Force became a big area of interest for me. And I do follow all of that around the world. And then, of course, I just really like to see where we have our forces deployed and what they're doing overseas. So I love coming on Veterans Radio to talk about all the things that are going on in the world and, of course, to highlight what our military forces are doing as well and try to speculate with you, Dale, on some of the things that we may see coming up in 2022.
Well, thank you very much for that. See, this is why we bring her on our program. We like to have the experts on to tell us what's really going on out there, because sometimes things get kind of messed up as we, in the different media outlets that are out there. And I like it talking with you, Dr. Grant, because I know I'm getting the straight story, and that is most appreciated. And as you mentioned, I guess we better start off with the elephant in the room, and that's probably Putin and what Russia's up to on the borders of what he's going to move into the Ukraine next.
Well, don't we want to know? And, I don't know what Putin is going to do. But, Dale, I tell you, it really boils down to the mind of Vladimir Putin. He has the ability right now to go into Ukraine if he wants to do that. And that's not just me saying it. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken really came right out and said it in early December. He said, Russia right now has the capability to step across and invade Ukraine. I know you've been following this. Just picture in your mind for a moment with me, how the forces look at the moment. If you think about the Black Sea, okay, it's kind of shaped like an oval. You've got Ukraine off to the right-hand side, the peninsula of Crimea, which Putin took in 2014. Do you remember back then we had the Sochi Olympics, and then like a couple weeks later, Russia invaded and took over Crimea, which is part of Ukraine. It was just like that, crazy. So right now what we're seeing is an unprecedented number of Russian military forces in Russia, but on the Ukraine border. There are more, if you go, so that's off to the right-hand side, the eastern side, up on top to the north on the Black Sea and bordering Ukraine, you have the nation of Belarus, the old White Russia. It was part of the Soviet Union way back, as was Ukraine. There are Russian forces in Belarus as well. Belarus is its own nation, but they're super close to the Russians. Okay, so then along the bottom side on the Black Sea, luckily we have several NATO allies, Turkey, Romania, Bulgaria, and you can think of the Black Sea right now is extremely active. There are NATO naval vessels in the Black Sea keeping an eye on everything, and not just keeping an eye on, but using their incredible radars to track everything. Lots of air activity over the Black Sea, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But really the question here is, will Putin decide to send those forces across? You've maybe seen on the news there have been some great commercial satellite images, like kind of big parking lots with Russian tanks in them. But what we're really looking for here is just what you'd expect, the tactical disposition of those Russian forces. Are the tanks all parked and the crews going off on Christmas leave and rotating, or are they really getting ready to move? And, we aren't going to know that from the intelligence, but that's what NATO is really watching closely. And the U.S. is very, very involved in what our NATO commander calls this extreme vigilance. So they're looking for all those delicate indicators and warning in the military lingo as to what the Russian forces are really going to do. So, there's no question Putin is poised to move forward. In just before Christmas, he came out with a list of 8 demands of things that he wanted from NATO. And it's a crazy list. It's things that there is no way, that no way he is ever going to get. And, you know, they had to know that. He knew that when the foreign minister sent them over. And, you know, like one thing he wants, of course, is for NATO to promise that Ukraine will never join NATO. Well, you know, the NATO Secretary General said, forget it. We're not, Russia doesn't make decisions for NATO. NATO makes decisions for NATO. You know, another thing that Putin demanded was that NATO take out military forces from all the NATO members who had joined after 1997. Okay, so this bear with me here for a minute. Because that includes a really interesting group of nations. It includes the three Baltic republics, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, and it includes Poland. And as you may know, Dale, we have a pretty significant army presence in Poland. There's a rotational armored brigade combat team. So there are typically about 4,500 U.S. soldiers in Poland at any given point in time. Putin wants all those removed, you know, and then there's this whole other list. So that's kind of where things stand right now. What are we going to do about the list of Putin's demands? Putin held a press conference last week. He loves to do this kind of thing. He had, you're not going to believe this, he had 500 reporters show up for this press conference, he claims. And he said, well, I gave NATO my demands, so the ball is in your court. Like, okay, never mind the 100,000 Russian troops on the Ukrainian border. Putin is trying to now put this up on the West. So we know that what happens next is there are talks scheduled for January 12th. And we also know that President Biden talked with Putin on Thursday, just a couple days ago. And what we've heard from that call, obviously not a lot of detail, but that Biden laid out and said, okay, there are going to be really serious consequences if you do anything. But it just, you know, I think everybody, no one would have seen this happening 6 months ago. And there's no question, but Putin is going to test the U.S. and test Biden like never before. So it really comes down to, you know, what is in Putin's mind.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that. I mean, what is the value of the Ukraine? I mean, other than it's another possible NATO, you know, fence post along the, what is that, the western edge of Russia?
Yeah, and exactly. And that, you know, Dale, that is a great question. You know, what is so special about Ukraine? I think for a lot of Americans, you know, we sort of, where is it, right? Where is that? Why are we concerned? But it's an excellent question. I've actually been to Ukraine. It was a long time ago. It's really nice, okay? It is a great, great country. It reminds me of Central California, with the great rich agriculture, and I mean, it sometimes it was called, like, you know, the breadbasket of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And of course, the history there goes back literally 1,000 years. And really scary, Putin put out a paper in the summertime, back in the summer of 2021, listing out all the historical reasons, starting with like the throne of Kiev and all the historical reasons why Ukraine and Russia should really be one. You know? And remember, Ukraine as a nation is only about 30 years old. A lot of Russians kind of think, hey, you know, those are our brothers over in Ukraine. They were part of the Soviet Union not so very long ago. Let's get them back. And then, of course, there are Russian-speaking people that live in Ukraine. Oh, so complicated. And, of course, the tragedy is there has been fighting going on in Ukraine since 2014, and the UN estimates that there have been, ready for this, 13,000 people killed in the fighting. And this is skirmishes between Ukraine's forces and Russian-backed separatists and guerrillas who often don't wear uniforms off in the eastern Donbass region. So what does Putin want? He wants to stop NATO. He is just irrationally delusional about the threat of NATO. I mean, if you step back and think about it, NATO is an alliance. It's no threat to anyone. So he really does not have a reasonable position here at all. He would perhaps like to have Ukraine back to put together that greater Russia, But the Europeans now are starting to say that Russia wants to have its historical sphere of influence. I mean, it's crazy. It sounds like something out of the history books. But I think the Europeans, you know, Finland's president just came out talking about this, and so has the head of NATO. I think they're really right. You know, Putin is looking for this sphere of influence. The only thing behind it could also be that it's a little bit of a cover for Putin's other big activity, which is his energy policies. You know, Putin really sort of revived the Russian economy, such as it is, through massive oil and liquid natural gas and other sales. So the energy strategy is very key. But I think it comes down to it. Putin really has this grudge against NATO. He's had it for a long time, and he believes that when the Cold War ended, we're talking 30 years ago now, Putin has in his mind that somebody, you know, a U.S. president, President Bush, the first President Bush, maybe President Clinton, someone promised that NATO wouldn't expand. And Putin says, you know, that NATO broke its promise. Well, nobody else remembers any promise like this ever, okay? But in his mind, this has happened, and, you know, he comes from this, of course, Putin's been in power in Russia in one office or another since 1999. He comes from a very, you know, just Russian despot background. You know, his parents actually, they're from Leningrad, and they lived through, his mom lived through the siege of Leningrad. His dad was in the military, World War II. I think he was in the submarines, which sounds horrible, but anyway. And Putin's older brother died as a child of diphtheria during the siege of Leningrad. So this guy, I mean, he has a historical grudge that I think most Americans, we just can't even comprehend. So that's it. Does he want it bad enough to do something? Is he just looking for a stalemate to get sanctions relief? Because it turns out taking over Crimea in 2014 was actually a really bad idea. We slapped, the U.S. and other countries slapped a ton of sanctions on Russia. And we're prepared to do more, kick them out of the banking system, do a lot of things that could really hurt. But it really just comes down to Putin and what motivates him. And I think the world is watching to see what that delusional man is going to do next.
I can't imagine. We're talking here with Dr. Rebecca Grant about Putin and Russia and what they seem to be doing. It sounds like he just wants to put back together the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. And I don't think that the people on the edges that were in all those little satellite countries are really that excited about that concept. I can't believe that, that this is actually what he thinks. But hearing that history, which I have not ever been aware of course, with his background, I mean, all I knew was that he was a, former KGB, secret police type person, and, he wants to get rid of the sanctions. But, and that's really the only thing that we have, because if he does, I'm afraid that if he does something, invade, the Ukraine or invade someplace else, that NATO will have to respond at some point. But how do you feel about that?
Yes, that's the question. And, to my mind, NATO is already pretty heavily involved in this. Two of the people that are key players here are the NATO Secretary General, Jens Stoltenberg, who everybody loves. He was going to retire, and they begged him to stay on. He's been head of NATO since 2014. He was a former prime minister of Norway. Interestingly, Stoltenberg has known Putin a very long time. They have known each other at least 20 years because Stoltenberg has been in international diplomacy and as a leader of Norway for so long. So it's not exactly like they're unknown commodities. So Stoltenberg has been terrific all along, but especially in this past year in being very firm that NATO will not tolerate losing Ukraine's sovereignty, right? That they've got to keep the territorial integrity of Ukraine. He's been very, very firm and clear on that. And, right up through, Stoltenberg traveled and met with NATO partners and allies right up through Christmas and phone calls and you name it, and they'll be back, hard at it again next week. So he's a very key leader. What's great about Stoltenberg is he's so widely respected in the alliance. And then the other key leader is, of course, the SACEUR, right? The job that was first held by Dwight Eisenhower, Supreme Allied Commander of Europe, the head of NATO, always held by an American. Right now, the general in that job is Todd Walters, who is actually an Air Force general. And very fortunate, again, Walters was a commander in Europe starting in 2016, and he's been in the NATO job now for 3 full years. So they are actually doing quite a bit, and we learned that an Air Force plane called the E-8 Joint Stars, or J-Stars, has been making passes over Ukrainian airspace. But let me tell you what's really cool about the J-Stars plane. It has a massive radar that is designed to look at moving targets on the ground called Ground Moving Target Indicator. So it can fly like a racetrack pattern over Ukraine airspace, but watch the entire Russian 100,000-man army doing its maneuvers or having chow or whatever they're doing. So the fact that they're flying J-Stars there, very, very significant. Britain's RAF, Royal Air Force, has another plane up and flying, the RC-135 Rivet Joint, which listens for electronic intelligence, you know, signals of headquarters and enemy communications spinning up in a way that would indicate invasion. And, of course, NATO also operates some drones. They have the MQ-9 Reaper, which is an armed drone, but also super long-duration reconnaissance drones. So all that is flying right now, along with NATO's air sovereignty missions, which are done by fighters and tankers all up and down NATO's line with Russia, literally from the little enclave of Kaliningrad up on the up in the north, right down across the Black Sea. So if they start up a tank engine, we are going to know about it, you know, between the satellites and the planes. But I think NATO's task right now is to try to put on a good deterrent posture. And, you know, I think they may need to do something big. I mean, they've given a lot of security guarantees to Ukraine without completely saying, okay, you're a NATO member. I was thinking, hey, why not, you know, make Ukraine a NATO member for a year? Give them a trial membership basis. And, you know, something, you just need something big. They may need something really big to deter Putin, because it's a terrible idea. It's a bad idea for Russia, bad idea for Ukraine, bad idea for the entire world.
I think so. You know, yeah. It's like they could have some sort of maneuvers there in the Black Sea or somewhere near the Ukraine just to show them that we're not going to put up with his bullying effect, you know, his talent for trying to do that. And as you mentioned in your email to me, that you know that he's really testing President Biden after the fall of Afghanistan.
No question. I mean, just no question. And it's tragic and very unfortunate. But there is no question in my mind that he is pushing harder. You know, Putin did have some Russian forces down on the Ukrainian border in the springtime in April, but nothing like what we're seeing now. Remember, there was a meeting between Biden and Putin back in June of last year. They got to size each other up. Again, Biden's been on the scene a long time, as has Putin, so they're not exactly unfamiliar with each other. You know, they pretty much know where each other is coming from. But it's, you know, really a question about the foreign policy of this administration, which is still just in its first year. They came in with some goals to work on other issues, climate change. And really, even in the summertime, you know, the Finnish president, very interesting, Finland's not a member of NATO, but they're very aligned militarily in some cases with NATO and along with, as is Sweden. And the Finnish president said, hey, you know, when Biden came over last summer, we were all thinking China, China, China was the threat, right? And here we are 6 months later seeing Russia try to build a sphere of influence. Remember, Russia and Finland had their own war back in 1939, and they have a huge border. There's an 800-kilometer border between Russia and Finland, so the Finns really are watching this closely, too. But I think all of Europe is really wondering what is going to happen here. You know, a good sign that we have is there's a new leader in Germany. Angela Merkel, who was there for over a decade, has retired, and the new chancellor with a new elections, different party, is a man named Olaf Scholz. And although he comes from a more liberal party than Merkel, Scholz has been terrific. He has been very blunt with Putin. You know, there's that enormous Nord Stream 2 pipeline that is at issue. The pipeline is done, but Germany will not turn it on. It's not actually working. The second one, the original one, is there, of course. So I think Scholz has been a little bit more confrontational than Putin was expecting, and that's really good because Germany, along with France, have been probably the two key NATO players in some of the diplomatic negotiations with Russia over Ukraine for the last several years. So it's good to have a strong leadership there. But no question, I think the Biden administration really has to come out with something, to my mind, a little bit stronger than what they're doing. They're working the back channels. They're letting the process work. And certainly they're very active. But I think to truly deter Putin is in the best interest of everyone in Europe and of the Russians as well. And I think we may need some stronger leadership from President Biden in order to make sure that Putin is deterred from stepping across into Ukraine.
Yeah, some sort of public pronouncement or something out there that, you know, will get his attention and also, you know, hopefully show everybody else in NATO that, you know, we are supporting you as much as we can.
Yes, you know, the world needs to see a really strong, coherent U.S. national security team, and that is what, the fall of Kabul and the loss of Afghanistan raised that question. Could the U.S. pull together, and I mean, I'm not talking about the military, they're great, or the American people. I'm really talking about the National Command Authority and about the White House. Are they able to get that national security team together to make real-time decisions? What would happen if there is a provocative border incident in Ukraine with Russian forces? What is the next move? Are they agile enough to make the correct move if a crisis starts to brew? That's what I think what everyone is wondering, and why I personally like to see some stronger statements that show that that Pentagon, State Department, White House team is really clicking and absolutely on top of the situation around Ukraine.
Right, absolutely. We're talking here with Dr. Rebecca Grant, and it's going quickly already. I want to talk about the other giant that's on the other side of Russia after we get back from our break. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about China. How's that sound?
Great, let's do it.
Okay, we're going to take a real quick break, and when we come back, you'll be back here with Dr. Rebecca Grant, and we're going to take a look at what's going on in China next. So you're listening to Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Sergeant First Class Donald Moyer threw himself on a grenade to save the lives of his comrades. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800. Moyer's platoon was committed to attack and secure terrain stubbornly defended by a numerically superior North Korean force in well-fortified positions. Advancing up the rocky hill, the leading elements came under intense automatic weapons, small arms, and grenade fire, wounding the platoon leader and platoon sergeant. Moyer rushed to the head of the faltering column, assumed command, and urged the men forward. Inspired by Moyer's unflinching courage, the troops responded, but as they reached the final approaches to the rugged crest of the hill, enemy fire increased in volume and intensity, and the fanatical foe showered the platoon with grenades. Undaunted, the group forged ahead, and as they neared the top of the hill, the enemy hurled a grenade into their midst. Moyer, fully aware of the odds against him, unhesitatingly threw himself on the grenade, absorbing the full blast of the explosion with his body. Although mortally wounded, Moyer's act saved several of his comrades from death or serious injury.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Military veterans touch everyone's life. I'm guessing right now you're thinking of a veteran, a close friend, relative. Maybe it's you. Even the toughest of us sometimes need help, but don't know where to turn for support. You don't need special training to help a veteran in your life. We can all help someone going through a difficult time. Learn how you can be there for veterans. Visit VeteransCrisisLine.net. VeteransCrisisLine.net. A message from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
We're back here on Veterans Radio. and with our guest, Dr. Rebecca Grant. And we're talking about what's going on in the world, militarily speaking. And we just finished up on Russia, and now we're going to go to China. And Dr. Grant, China always seems to be the majority of our time spent, but today it's still a big problem out there, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Just because we're also talking about Ukraine and Russia doesn't mean we can take our eyes off China for a minute. Most of the fall, we spent watching China fly really big air fighter and bomber packages into Taiwan's airspace. So we know that China's President Xi Jinping has announced that there will be a reunification between China and Taiwan. He hasn't said exactly when, but he said it can and it must happen. Of course, you know, that's a long-standing Chinese policy. But what's been different all fall is that China has been running, well, you know, the Air Force calls them guerrilla packages because so many aircraft, right? They've been flying 35 or 40 military aircraft into Taiwan's airspace. You know what worries me about this is eventually someday they'll just fly those big packages in and stay, you know, and they will have touched off a conflict potentially. It's a significant escalation of their military activity, and it tells me two things. One is that China really is looking at, is really eyeing Taiwan in a new way. And secondly, it tells me that China's military is getting better at doing these combined operations. You know, this is a dangerous sign when they're practicing the big combined air warfare maneuvers that the U.S. is so good at. Remember, China has no military experience to speak of. They haven't fought a major war really since the revolution concluded in 1949. There have been a couple incidents, including a terrible one with some Indian forces on the China-India border, but for the most part, zero combat experience. So they are practicing hard in the Pacific around Taiwan to try to make up for some of that. And by the way, Russia helps them out. They do a lot of joint exercises with Russia, and that has really escalated over the past year. They also, President Xi of China got Putin of Russia to agree to attend the Olympics, right? You know, a lot of diplomats are boycotting the upcoming Olympics in Beijing, but Russia has said they'll be there. So isn't that nice, Russia and China getting along? Don't like it. But there's something else I really wanted to talk about with China, Dale, and that is the insider threat. Have you heard of that one?
I had not until I saw your email about the Harvard professor. Could you tell our audience about that?
Wow, yeah. This insider threat is something that the FBI has been trying to publicize for a while, but I was shocked when I first heard the initiative that then-Attorney General Bill Barr rolled out in February of 2020. I had no idea of the level of infiltration and penetration of U.S. universities and technology research. You know, Dale, we all know about the cyber espionage. I think we've all heard about that and the numerous cases of China's cyber espionage, but this is the kind of thing that's going on in plain daylight. And just last week, there was a major conviction. I've got to tell you the details. Harvard University's chair of their chemistry and chemical biology department, a man named Dr. Charles Lieber, was convicted of lying to the FBI about the extent of his ties to China. I mean, shocking. And to me, it's just the tip of the iceberg. So let me tell you a little bit about Lieber. He is a specialist in nanotechnology, which is the study of microscopic technology for structures and other things, very, very leading edge. And it turned out this is what he'd been up to. He was part of what China calls the Thousand Talents Program. And under this program, Lieber was a strategic scientist at the Wuhan University of Technology while he was holding his job at Harvard. And there's nothing actually wrong with that, although it's really unsavory because the Chinese were paying him $50,000 a month to help them build up their nanoscience research through this Thousand Talents program, okay? And he was also getting other big cash payments, like he got a payment of $180,000. All this is going on. But here's what the FBI found out. So Lieber, because he was working, obviously, at Harvard at the same time that he was working for the Chinese, he had grants from the National Institute of Health and from the Department of Defense. And if you get one of those grants at your university, you have to disclose your conflicts of interest. And he had not told the FBI that he was doing all this work for China and getting paid. I mean, it's incredible. And I know your listeners are going, whoa, I can't believe it. And especially any listeners that have had to, like, have a security clearance or work in a job where you have to report if you're, like, going to Canada for a vacation, you know, all
right,
this stuff.
You can't do anything without, you know, background checks and everything else.
Of course, right? And here's this professor at Harvard, a really brilliant man, right? And he's, you know, 61 years old. He's old enough to know better. He is failing to tell the FBI that he's on the payroll of the Wuhan University of Technology and making all this money. I mean, you know, it's not like he's even trying to hide it. So he had done this from 2012 to 2017, and he was convicted on six counts. But what this really shows you, and this is why the FBI and the U.S. attorney in Boston has run to publicize this case, is that this just goes on all over America. There are numerous Chinese graduate students enrolled at our top universities. There are professors and researchers who are frequently approached with these tempting offers, like this one, $50,000 a month, to help this. And the Chinese here, this is all run by the Chinese military and, of course, by the Chinese Communist Party. They are taking advantage of America's academic freedom, which is something we all cherish. They're taking advantage of some naivete on the part of, I think, of Americans who believe in, you know, global collaboration and research. Hey, I did my degree at a foreign university, and I'm a big believer in cooperating with other countries and in academic research. I have colleagues all around the world. So the Chinese go and take advantage of this in order to burrow into our most precious, national talent, right? And the edge of what makes us great as a country, all our fantastic, our diverse array of scientists and technologists, and they come with this money and they just roll it up. And I mean, the Chinese have even tried to do things like, and it's not just universities, it's industry as well. A couple of years ago, the Chinese were hot to get the formula to make, you know, Oreo cookies and the icing in the middle and how it's really white. Okay. How do you make it so white? They wanted the Oreo formula. Now, why on earth? You know, well, super white paint is, of course, really good at repelling sunlight. And so when you are attempting to shade equipment and things like that, it's a really useful thing. It's just an example of industrial espionage going on all over the place. So the insider threat is intense. The number of Chinese students in the U.S. has gone from, you know, 40, 50,000 15 years ago to about 400,000 today. Probably some of them are great, and probably a lot of them are actually working for the Chinese military. And that's, they are carefully watched and monitored. None of this is, you know, none of this is a secret or a surprise. But the FBI is really trying to get some information out about this, I think, so that people will not be as naive and trusting. Certainly, Professor Lieber of Harvard really goofed up by not admitting he was getting $50,000 a month from the Chinese Communist Party. Crazy.
It's hard to believe. I mean, I'm here in, you know, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is a huge research university as well. And, you know, we have seen an increase in Asian population, as far as, you know, graduate students and even faculty members up there. And you just wonder, you know, if it almost sounds as though we're going back to the 1950s, only it's the Chinese instead of the Russians that are trying to infiltrate, you know, all of the intellectual properties that we have available out there. And as you pointed out, that they're also, you know, taking advantage of our freedom, you know, our educational freedom that are there. And it's not a good sign.
yes, they are taking advantage. And, you know, like you, Dale, we want to be welcoming and opening. And part of me just recoils at even having to talk about this. But the fact is we do. And a lot of these people are coming over at the behest of the Chinese military, and they're coming to steal our secrets and coming to worm their way into our high technology research. And you talk about the 1950s and the Russian infiltration. I think one of the big differences is that the Chinese are doing it on such a massive scale, right? And it's going on right out in the open. And they are indeed taking advantage of our good nature as Americans and of our desire to welcome people from abroad and people to collaborate with and research with and to, you know, to try to come up with the best, right? They're really taking advantage of our culture in order to benefit, and sadly, in order to benefit the Chinese Communist Party. And again, let's make the distinction. It's not all the people of China. It's this despotic 100-year-old Communist Party that runs them that is the problem.
Right. Yes. And it's obviously something we have to worry about, and we don't want to be, you know, totally paranoid. But as I always say, you never know. And sometimes there is somebody actually following you, and it's another thing that, you know, whoever is in charge has to keep their eyes on.
That's right. And I think, again, the FBI has publicized this a lot in order to raise awareness so that there are more questions. And if you are one of those brilliant scientists, you know, maybe think twice before you enroll in the 1,000 Talents program. But talking about being paranoid, China has done some things this past year that we should genuinely be scared about. And that includes their nuclear weapons buildup and their new fractional orbital bombardment system.
Well, that's a big word for what does that do?
I know, right? It is. It's terrible. Let me just review the nuclear weapons buildup first. Again, widely reported throughout this year, but China has unveiled, on purpose, a new missile field that they're building that will hold up to 250 new nuclear missile silos for intercontinental attack. Remember, Dale, China has had nuclear weapons since the 60s, but they've kept usually just a very small deterrent force. But they are now out to expand, to double and perhaps triple their number of nuclear weapons. What for? I mean, it's just bad, okay? And they don't need them. This is a bad idea. And they do not do arms control. None. Forget it. Zero. Nothing. You know, we do at least have arms control talks with the Russians and a strategic arms limitation treaty in force. China does not do arms control, and they are building 250 new missile silos, and they opened a third plutonium processing site to fill those weapons up. It's terrible. Now, the fractional orbital bombardment system. This was a test that took place over the summer. Reports of it came out in the fall. And essentially, China put a vehicle in orbited around the planet, popped it open, and out came a glide vehicle that went down and, well, actually, they slightly missed their target, but it hit within 25 miles of where they intended it to hit. People went nuts. Why? You know, it's not the newest technology, but here's what's scary about it. Normally, we think about intercontinental missiles. We know where they are. They come on a very set path, and our radars are built to watch for them, okay? This orbital system can drop in from any place, and specifically from more of a southern approach. So imagine it coming up, you know, on orbit from more like the direction of Antarctica into the U.S. So it is a threat that is much harder to track. It's not an operational system right now, but another scary thing, it could be nuclear, it could be conventional. But just the fact that China is doing this and they can put it up on orbit and then pop it out and drop it down when they want to, again, what for? You know, I mean, it is really, you know, obviously it's to limit American military power and to get back at the U.S. and our wonderful allies, Japan, Australia, et cetera, and to try to push back and to try to extend Chinese military power just as they've extended Chinese economic power. Very scary.
It sounds like something out of James Bond.
It does, right? Some of those James Bond movies. You know, you watch those, and they had some interesting technology points. But what's – and those – you know, Dale, that's a good point, because those James Bond movies that we're talking about, they're pretty old.
I know.
The fact is we just haven't done much. You know, we had arms control with Russia. We've reduced a lot of nuclear weapons. So we just weren't really ready, again, for China, and this has happened in the last 2 years, to pop up as a rising nuclear power. And it really changes our problem of how to track a missile launch like that. You know, I think as everyone remembers from the Cold War, we don't have defenses against Russia's nuclear missiles. We have deterrence. Really hard to know, do we have that with China? Do we not have that? You know, it's just a very different dialogue. China's military is not an experienced military. They don't know the horrors of war. It's just very, very tough, and that's one thing that our Global Strike Command and our military senior leaders are really working on, is trying to see where we are with nuclear deterrence with China. Wow.
Well, you know, it'd be really interesting to have you or somebody that you could refer to us that could talk about the military budget that was, you know, that's being passive. You know, everybody thinks is so outrageous, but if you think of all these potential enemies and things that are going on out there, that maybe some of that money is necessary for, as deterrence. You know, what kind of equipment do we need to come up with as far as the technology is concerned to, you know, to block these potential attacks from everywhere?
Exactly. And watch closely in probably February of this year when the Biden administration releases its nuclear posture review. As your listeners may know, we have big programs underway to rebuild the nuclear triad. The Navy's building Columbia-class submarine, the Air Force, the B-21 bomber, and the new ground-based strategic deterrent, which is a long way of saying new ICBM, new intercontinental missiles. Ours are very old. And then we must also rebuild the ability to make newer nuclear weapons. I hate it, too. I think a lot of us do. But this is about deterring, and our force has gotten really very old. So we'll see in February if the Biden administration is going to go for that. There's quite a bit of support on Capitol Hill. No one wants it to be this way, but we don't want to leave our country unprotected and feel that investing now in rebuilding the nuclear enterprise is the best bet for deterrence.
Well, you know, it's not a really good analogy, but we, you know, many of us will go out and get a new car every 10 years, whether we need it or not. And it's you know, it just sounds like, you know, so much of our military equipment is outdated. The technology changes overnight, and maybe this is where we have to go.
Exactly right. Outdated, hard to maintain. And if we take part of it out, you know, if we took away the submarines, we'd need more bombers to cover that piece of the triad. The triad has kept the peace for many, many decades, and we want to make sure we're upholding that triad, especially as we see the threat of China as a rising nuclear power.
Holy moly. All right, well, we talked about the influence of the Chinese, you know, coming into the United States and, you know, working with the various universities to steal their secrets. You have there's something going on at the border, southern border. You know, we all remember that, and that it's still there and still people coming in. But you mentioned that there are a lot of different countries trying to get in.
Yes, so including 450 Chinese nationals were apprehended trying to cross the southern U.S. border from Mexico into the U.S. in the year 2021. 450 Chinese nationals. What the heck? You know, we think the southern border is a constant issue, and there's so many, you know, heartrending human stories and so many issues and problems of all types that go on down there. But, I think the key, that the way I'm looking at it here right now, is this has gone international. And this is about security. We've talked a lot about Europe and Europe's borders and the border with Ukraine. You know, in Europe, they're used to defending the borders. Here we have a case where apparently there were 1.7 million apprehensions of people crossing illegally in 2021. And I was shocked to learn that there were 45 different nationalities among those picked up. Now, here's the problem. That raises counterterrorism concerns. And
yes.
Very interesting, El Paso Border Chief, El Paso Border Patrol Chief Gloria Chavez recently said that her team had picked up five people from Turkey. Well, and apparently that brings our total of illegal Turkish migrants on the southern border to over 1,000. What the heck? Again, I mean, it's just, so if you, so imagine, you know, here's a scenario, and I know our national leaders are thinking about this. If you're a would-be terrorist of some type, you get a ticket to Mexico and try to cross in that way. I mean, this is something that they have to think about, just as they're careful with other legal ports of entry. And it turns out that there have been about 20,000 people apprehended from non-Central American countries, not from the Northern Triangle countries, trying to come across that southern border. So if we ever wondered if border security is national security, yes, border security is national security, and it does have a counterterrorism angle.
I don't know. who wants to be a politician today? I can't imagine doing this at all. But we're talking with Dr. Rebecca Grant, and as we come up toward the top of the hour, I think I've got about four minutes or so left. The last question that I wanted to talk on was a little bit about the Iran nuclear talks that are kind of starting up again, because they haven't been playing by the rules, have they?
Right. We talked about Chinese nuclear weapons, but now Iran really has not been playing by the rules. Iran had a change of government last year, and if they could get any more intransigent, they have. So round 8 of the new nuclear talks have been going on in Vienna. You'll recall that Iran is in massive violation of the 2015 deal. This is a deal made with the U.S., China, Russia, France, Germany, and the EU, called the JCPOA, or we call it the Iran deal. President Donald Trump pulled the U.S. out of that deal in 2018, and in 2019, Iran started violating their agreements. They had agreed not to enrich nuclear fuel, not to enrich uranium over 3%. Guess what? They now have enriched up to 60%, according to the International Atomic Energy Agency. You need about 90%, a little more than 90%, to build a crude nuclear weapon. So they are getting up there. Iran is continuing basically with its nuclear blackmail. We have a ton of sanctions on Iran. They would be stacked to the ceiling if you printed them out and stacked them up. Iran would like some sanctions relief as well. But what is crazy about this is Iran just isn't giving an inch. You know, they'll come to these meetings and they sit down and they won't say anything, and then they make some stupid demand and leave. So even the European allies have gotten really, really frustrated with Iran. For Iran, this quest for a nuclear weapon helps keep their regime in power. They, of course, continue to be huge sponsors of terrorism. They just got caught shipping rifles to the Houthi rebels in Yemen. Just last week, they just got picked up on a typical shipping route doing that. They support terrorism all over the place. And, of course, they oppress their own people. You know, Iran is the people of Iran, wonderful nation, tremendous history, but a horrible despotic regime. And these nuclear talks, even the French and Germans have said, we are just about done here. There's really no deal to go back to, given the extent of Iran's violations at this point in time.
Ooh, holy mackerel. Anything good to say?
Oh, my gosh. I know, right? There really is. It's funny. There really, really is a lot. You know, I think when you say anything good to say, I always think of our military. There they are, operating in so many countries around the world, stronger and better than ever. And when you think about someone like Putin, so delusional, it reminds me that our American military service members, they're not doing this to build a sphere of influence or take over territory. They're doing this on behalf of America, to keep us safe and to make the world safer and to uphold international law. And I also think of our wonderful allies that stretch from, of course, Britain and our wonderful NATO allies right across through the Pacific, Japan, Australia. One great thing about America, we have a lot of friends around the world.
That's right.
And we're really seeing where the threats are. And these friends, they are standing together.
Good thing. Good thing. Well, another program is coming up to the end. Dr. Rebecca Grant, our expert in foreign affairs in the Air Force, always have to have you back on, of course. I want to thank you again very much for being on today's program. And let's do this for another 10 years. How do you feel?
I'd love to. Thank you very much, Dale.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye. All right, folks, that's it. Another program, as they say, is done. is Dr. Rebecca Grant. You can find out more about her. She is on Twitter. She runs the IRIS. I just forgot the name of it here in front of me. Just had it here. Institute, a research institute, where she checks out foreign policy and talks about what's going on in the military. You can look for her on Fox News. You can see her on CNN. All across the schedule, she is a known expert in the American foreign policy. And so we've got a lot of things going on this year. I want to make sure that I remind everybody to check out our sponsors again and see what you can do to support them as they have supported us. And with a minute to go, I want to make sure that all of you know that Veterans Radio, we're going into our 19th year. And we have not only are all of our programs now being archived on our website, but where you can find us on pretty much any podcast station out there. Just go on to their platform and say Veterans Radio, and stories will come up, some that we don't put on our regular weekly broadcast. So, again, this is Dale Thronberry for Veterans Radio. We want to thank you for listening. We will be back next week. And until then, you are dismissed.